Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find more podcast episodes and other content at dsmsports.net, also on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also follow me on Twitter at njh287. Really cool show for you guys today. I got the chance to speak with Kasper Vesterang. He is the social media manager for TV3 Sport out in Denmark. They also cover all over Scandinavia and Europe as well. Just really fascinating insight into how social media and sports works, well, a long ways away from the United States. And some really cool information, some wisdom dropped from him, and some differences that we can learn from, and some differences that they can learn from as well. So I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation with Kasper. But before we get to my conversation, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is a brand new app from Apple for iOS only, but it is called the Clips app. And it is a video app on steroids. I still have not been able to figure out all the little features in it, but it's really cool. It has a ton of filters. It's a video-first app. You can upload video from your library. You can also take video live. And you can overlay tons of different filters, lots of different text icons and shapes. You can put soundtracks onto it. You can actually speak and have captions pop up as you speak, which really comes in handy if you're doing an interview or just want to address the camera, because captions are so big these days. Just so much you can do with this app. I'm still kind of looking at it and trying to experiment with it. But once you're done with your video, you can stitch together different videos and really create a little feature film and then save to your camera roll, or also upload to various social media platforms or email to yourself. Really cool stuff. I'm anxious to see if some folks try this out. Again, it's kind of like a combination of Facebook's new stories, Instagram stories, Snapchat, and allows you to really create a nice little masterpiece in a matter of moments. So give it a shot. Maybe you can figure it out more quickly than I can. It is called the Clips app, brand new for iOS only. I'd love to see what you can create today. So that's this episode's helpful tool, the Clips app, and I'll be right back to have a really good conversation. Stick around to hear from Kasper Vesterang. He's a social media manager for TV3 Sport out in Denmark. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, and now I am delighted to be joined by an international guest. We've had a few of them on the podcast over the years. I'm joined today by Kasper Vesterang. He is the social media manager for TV3 Sport, based out in Scandinavia, in particular Denmark. He works all over the place there. Welcome to the podcast today, Kasper.
Thank you, Neil. I'm very pleased to be able to join you here.
Really interested to learn about all things happening over there in Scandinavia, and you know, how you guys are using social media to engage your sports fans. But before we get into the meat of the discussion, we want to learn about you. Tell us about your career path, how you got started, maybe in journalism and social media, working in radio, and you know, how you got your job today, and any tips for folks that want to you know, emulate what you did.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it a bit focused. it's been 10 years in a lot of different places, but yeah, I started out as a journalist. Wanted to be a sports commentator, like all young sports fans wants to, worked a lot with that. Actually, had a year and a half on TV3 Sport, where I am now. So it's like 12 years ago. Then I was a sports reporter like everyone else. And in Europe, you just fancy soccer, which we call football, and maybe some cycling, all the classic sports, or I didn't really stick out. I was like everyone else. So it was a lot of hard work to get some assignments, and I freelanced, and then I wanted to find something more like a regular job, and went for a communication, and ended up in a digital sales company, actually doing the communication. And that was like 2008 or something. So it was a point where companies in Denmark started using Facebook as started to create Facebook pages, and started to experiment with Facebook as a platform. So I dug deep into how to use Facebook, read a lot of reports online, became an expert in Danish terms, an expert in Facebook marketing, and that was quite a coincidence, but it just interested me a lot with this Facebook and Twitter. And then by being a journalist, it just started to open up opportunities in a lot of different companies, because they wanted people to manage their Facebook pages. Mm-hmm. It was new positions all around, and it was this mix of working with online marketing and content. And by studying all these reports, I learned a lot about the marketing side, and being a journalist, I had a sense of content. And yeah, so I went to Just Eat. They're not in the US, but it's quite a big online takeaway company. Mm-hmm. I think you have Delivery Hero or some companies like that in the States. But it was in 17 countries at that point, and I did social media for them in Denmark. It's a Danish startup, so mm-hmm. so they're quite big in Denmark. That was my first job in a marketing department. I learned a lot about marketing from my boss there. I learned a lot about using Facebook. I had my first contact persons at Facebook. We started using paid social. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot about that, and I was there for almost 2 years, and then I had an opportunity at one of the biggest and oldest newspaper organizations in Denmark called Berlingske. So I went there for a short period in their marketing department, doing social media, mainly paid social there. Mm-hmm. And from there, just a few months after I started, I had an opportunity to join the Danish Broadcast Corporation, which is the public Danish television and radio station. I had an opportunity to be social media editor in the news department, and that is the biggest news department in Denmark. So, wow. So quite an opportunity, and I grabbed that, and it was very cool. It wasn't a strategy and measuring. It was a lot more managing the profiles and pages, but also being like the internal expert, going on television and radio and talking about what's happening in the tech world general. That was very exciting, and I learned a lot from that. It was at the period when Twitter was doing the IPO and going public, and mm-hmm. there was obviously a lot of stories about that. And also about Facebook. Facebook had that 10 years birthday while I was there, so we did a lot of stories about Facebook and their impact on the world, but on Denmark and on news and on everything. Mm-hmm. But after a year there, I was asked to come back to TV3 Sport, where I was 10 years ago as a journalism intern, and they didn't have a social media manager, and they wanted to have some strategy around their social media, mm-hmm. and to get it all like streamlined, and they asked me for some tips on how to do it, and then they asked me to come and do it the way I told them to do it. So couldn't say no to that, working with sports again, and then I've been there for 3 years, and excellent. We're growing, and you know, a lot of things happening in the sport and tech world, and so I'm really enjoying that, and enjoying all the new opportunities that are there, because TV3 Sport is part of MTG, Modern Times Group, mm-hmm. which is quite a big company that is trying to transform themselves from being a television company to being a digital entertainer. So they are investing in a lot of digital stuff, like esports, mainly mm-hmm. esports and mobile gaming and different stuff like that. And that's starting also to try to be global. So we are in terms of TV, we are mainly active in Scandinavia, so Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and Finland. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to start some initiatives that are global. So they invested in ESL for esports, and they just launched the World Boxing Super Series, which is a global league for boxing, and that is so in a partnership with some some boxing promoters. But a lot of interesting things going on that that I can play a little or a bigger part in. So yeah. So that's exciting.
We think of out here in the States and perhaps all around the world, we think of sports and social media being so inherently tied together now for several years, it seems like. Has that been the case for a long time in Denmark and in the greater Scandinavian countries, where people have always thought, okay, there is a second screen. When you're watching a sport on TV, you are also following on Twitter, you're engaging on Facebook, maybe Instagram now. Has that always been kind of a part of the play, or was that a slowly evolving way to consume sports?
No, I don't know if it's always been. I'm so old, so I do remember the days before social media. But the way I see it, it was so it came along with the sports. The Twitter was exciting. Twitter is very big in England, and we watch a lot of Premier League football from England in Denmark. We started to use it a lot, maybe 3-4, maybe 5 years ago. And there was a lot of this second screen talk, and there was this whole universe going on at the same time as some event being played or a match. But I believe it has now developed into a more like a 24/7 thing and a 7 days a week thing. So for us, it's social media is a lot, and digital is a lot more about being there every day of the week than being there and engaging people during a match or just during the hour up leading up to a match. I believe it's the same task for the clubs and the leagues and the players is to have this. So when social media started, you just saw it as the second screen thing, and you can use it at the same time you had an event, and now you really try to utilize it to keep an interest 365 days a year.
And I find it interesting too that you came up in a marketing and a sales role before you took on this role with TVD Sport, which is a kind of a little bit of everything, it sounds like. So I mean, how did that kind of affect the way that you came up in how you looked at social? Like, was that the value of engagement just for the sake of engagement always a big part of the picture? Or, earlier on, was it more about, how can we drive newspaper subscriptions via social? Or how can we drive this via social? Or was there always a value and a buy-in from your bosses that, you had this much reach on Facebook, or you had this much engagement on Facebook, and we value that even if we can't directly tie it to a revenue driving campaign on our website?
That's been very different with my different bosses. But I am very focused on results, and that has been like the driver all the time, that I want to create results. So from the very beginning, it was all about creating traffic or sales or whatever the focus was on the different departments. So that's really what drives me, and that was what increased my interest in social media and in the digital world was that you were able to create such good results and just growing fan bases, growing traffic, growing sales with the use of digital, and that could be subscription, that could be online takeaway sales. For the sales department, it was getting tasks from people who wanted to like new windows or new roofs on the Danish Broadcast Corporation. It was also traffic, but also trying to make people turn on their TV. Right. And now TV3 Sport, it's a lot of traffic, and it's traffic both for AVOD on our website, but also for our over the top service we have in Scandinavia, and it's also for TV, and it's also we also have sponsored content where we want people to go to one of our sponsors. We also do this old-fashioned newsletter stuff, so we also try to collect a lot of email permissions. But it's all about getting results. But my how to say that, not like mentality. My view on this is that you can drive the results, you can increase all your traffic results, but you have to do it on the premises of how this platform works. I mainly work with Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, for driving a lot of traffic from Facebook, you need to put in some engaging stuff there, because that's the nature of Facebook. I usually say that you can look at these Sports Bible, for example, which is pretty huge on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see it in your feed, you always see the fun and the engaging posts. But if you go to that page, you'll see a lot of link posts, and clicking on them, you'll see a lot of ads, and that's obviously how they monetize their business. So they put out a lot of engaging stuff, but every time they put out one sort of engaging post, they put out three link posts that gets a lot lower reach probably,
mm-hmm.
but that's what gives them money, and we do it kind of the same way. We put a lot of link posts out. But we also do a lot of fun stuff. Try to give a little away to keep the fans happy.
And how has that evolved in your time with TV3 Sport? Like, is it always going to be, or not always? But has website traffic been the primary, key goal? That it's great to engage our fan base on Facebook, but ultimately, we want to engage them with the goal of getting them to our website, because is traffic like your primary goal, key data point, or is Facebook reach and Facebook engagement, just as valued, or is it moving that way?
Actually, it has been moving a bit the other way, mm-hmm. around. So starting out 3 years ago, I created the goals, and one of the goals was traffic. One of the goals was Viaplay, our over-the-top service,
mm-hmm.
getting traffic there, trying to get new customers. And then my third goal at that point was creating better TV experiences. So trying, mm-hmm. to engage people around our shows and include tweets and Facebook comments in our build-ups and during matches. Growing fan bases and reach, but now we kind of, maybe half a year ago or 1 year ago, we hit a point where we got so big, we have a lot of Facebook pages. We go with kind of a BuzzFeed strategy with just creating a lot of pages, trying to get a lot of fans. So,
mm-hmm.
so we have around 500,000 fans, and that might not sound of a lot in the States, but I just tried to figure out that we had 3.2 million Facebook users in Denmark. So if you compare it to the US, it would be around 25 million fans.
Yeah, that's damn impressive. And you said you have several different pages. So is it like a different one for each sport, or different ones for Brock?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we have a different one for each sport, but then in football, soccer, we have for both the Champions League, for the Premier League, for the Danish League, for the Spanish League, for the Italian League, and so on.
What's the thought process behind? I know you mentioned like kind of the BuzzFeed model. What's the reasoning behind? Let's have one for Champions League. Let's have one for this league, as opposed to just one giant football page.
So that's a very very tough question, and. If I have to be honest, it's quite by coincidence, because the thing was that I started. We have a lot of sports rights in Denmark or in Scandinavia,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be like the Champions League, the Premier League, the Danish League, the NFL, Formula One, UFC, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started, there wasn't this social media department. But there was a lot of Facebook pages and Twitter profiles, and they were all just managed by the editors or one journalist on each different sports desk. So they were already created, and they were actually already like okay big. They were at least big enough, so I didn't want to close them down and merge them together. So uh, So we just decided to try and go on with that and see if we could create enough content for them. And it hasn't been a problem so far.
Okay.
We've closed down one page and started up a few others. And we can, because a lot of broadcasters are using a different strategy and try to keep it to a very few pages, like Sky Sports in England, for example. And they have some big pages, but the way I see it is that we don't need to we can do some experiments on our pages, because if one of the pages get too many posts or for some reason doesn't get the reach in 1 month that it has got until then. Then we have a lot of other pages that'll drive traffic for us, and they'll do the job. So I believe that we can do a lot of experiments on different pages, and we can try to post more and see what's the effect of that. And we can do that a lot and often. And if we had only one or two big pages, I would be a lot more careful to do all these experiments. So that's one of the upsides. One of the downsides is that obviously you need a lot of content and you need to keep an eye with all these pages. You need tools for the community management part but it's hard work, but I think it's working for us, and we're growing faster in fan base than all the other media companies in Denmark.
That's great.
So I think it's paying off, but it kind of secures my job too, because you need someone to take care of all these pages, right? So
seriously, what's that? How does it actually work in practice when you do have all these pages that you're managing and different content coming up? Is it just a lot of communication, a lot of meetings, or are people sending you content saying this is good content, or we have a good highlight package to show on Facebook, or here's what some stories are, these are some stories we're working on for this week's programming? How does it all play out, and you guys all stay on the same page with each other?
Yeah, that's an ongoing process that has been going on for years and will be going on for years. And all of our sports departments are working in different ways. So we try to get the best partnership with them, the TV departments.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very different. But I think we have so much content. We have two sports channels on TV, and a golf channel, and then we have a lot of sports on this over the top service. So we have so much content coming in also from Premier League and from Champions League and UFC, for example. So we have so much content that we can put out there. Then we create a lot of easy content around that, like just overviews of what is going to happen, just like congratulations to players and all that kind of classic stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we have a lot of journalists in-house doing TV, and when they go to a match or go doing an interview or stuff like that, I try to contact them before that and ask them to do, hey, could you bring our Snapchat profile?
Or
could you do like this funny video with him juggling with the ball and answering three questions from Facebook users or whatever weird content I can figure out. But it has been a long process, and from the beginning, I always had to like kick in the doors to the editors, and now I'm invited very early in the process, planning. For example, next week we have Champions League, we have Barcelona against Juventus, and I've been in the process from the very beginning, also being able to brainstorm with them around the build up on TV. But yeah, so with partnering really close with the editors and are doing some very good stuff, and now we've grown so big so they see the potential, and the reality is that the number of television viewers is not growing on all our sports, so all the TV guys are under a bit of pressure, and now we monetize a lot of the content we put out on digital. So our bosses are great at pushing the TV people to do digital stuff. So it's been quite a travel, and I only see it getting better and better. And actually, we are horribly busy in my department, just managing all the content that comes from the TV journalist.
I bet. That's the best way to get them to contribute and get buy-in is when you have the numbers to back it up, and that'll definitely go a long way. And I heard you mention Snapchat in there as well, and I know you said it's mostly Facebook and Twitter, and as you lead there and kind of serve as that social media expert at TV3 Sport, how has it been kind of adapting new platforms? I mean, Facebook and Twitter is probably hard enough just to get a handle on all those with all different properties that you have. So are you mostly just watching what's happening in Denmark among your viewers? Are you watching what's popular in the individual leagues? Like, oh, there's a lot of Premier League teams now on Instagram, on Snapchat. How do you kind of evaluate where you guys should be expanding resources, different platforms you should be getting onto?
I'm definitely looking outside Denmark also, because we are in terms of sports, we are by far number one in Denmark, and doesn't get a lot of inspiration, to be honest. Mm-hmm. From inside from Denmark in the sports world. So we definitely look at what's happening in other countries. But the thing is that we like to experiment. We like to test new platforms. We like to test it, one or two times. And then we usually find out that it doesn't give us the payoff as Facebook do. And then we are so result-oriented. We are so focused on earning some money and monetizing all our the stuff we do on digital. So we kind of get back to Facebook and put our effort there. But the way I do it is that we use Snapchat. So we build it up. So we have 10,000 fans. I don't know what the equal would be in the US, 10,000 friends. But it doesn't really fulfill any of our goals, as our goals are mainly around link, pushing out links. Same goes with Instagram. So, but we built our profiles. We have 10,000 fans on each, and then we are just doing it once or twice a week. We're doing a story. We're mm-hmm. posting some easy stuff on Instagram. Not doing anything fancy there. Just like being ready if something is happening in the social world. If Facebook are turning on some of their buttons around reach and right. in terms of links, then we feel we're ready to act on that and increase our effort on the other social platforms. But regarding Twitter, Twitter is a bit special in Denmark because it's not that big, okay. and it's very focused around politics and journalism. And then there is this I want to say a few hundred people engaging around sports on Twitter, but then they are very engaged and they mm-hmm. and they fill up the landscape. You see them a lot because there's a lot of journalists on Twitter too, but it's not there you get the reach that you get on Facebook.
When there's an exciting Champions League match coming down to the end, and are fans all talking about it on Facebook, or is it mostly not a lot of in chatter during the match, and after the match is over, everyone is posting on Facebook? And what's that fan experience like as they're experiencing an exciting match?
Yeah, it'll be a lot on Facebook, mm-hmm. Writing about the match in their feed, or hopefully engaging with the stuff that we put out there. So we put a lot of stuff on Facebook during big matches, both before and after the match, and we try to use our TV guys to do it. So we might set up an extra football expert to do a Facebook Live during our build-up, mm-hmm. to get people to get a notification, and then he can answer a lot of questions, and then he can ask people to turn on the television.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just try I think that's pretty ordinary, but yeah, try to put out the content that people want to put out. We try to say the things that they want to say. We try to create the debates, not by putting out our opinions,
mm-hmm.
but just by pushing on to get a discussion about Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi, who's the better player.
Right.
But we know that'll engage a lot of people, especially if during a match with them playing.
Right.
So
there is an attempt to engage during the match. It's not just the build up and then everyone sits back and waits till the end of the match, and then you guys come back on and start engaging again. There is a lot of activity happening during the match, or not too much?
Oh, there is, but that'll be the big matches, because mm-hmm. we show all Premier League matches, all La Liga matches, mm-hmm. Almost all matches.
Oh, right. Just in general, whether it's an F1 race or a football match or a cycling race,
yeah.
Just trying to think about what you guys want fans to be doing during the actual event. Do you want them to not be checking Facebook every 2 seconds and just paying attention to the broadcast? Or
definitely. We've mm-hmm. had some discussions about that, around that, with our, especially with our hosts and commentators. Actually, our editors seem to get it right away. But our take on that, and hopefully soon all our commentators and hosts' take on that, is that we don't cannibalize on our television show by putting out content during the build up or during the match.
Mm-hmm.
We just give people an alternative. Because they're going to sit with their phone or tablet in their hands anyway, and if they're not going to engage with our stuff, they're going to engage with the club's stuff,
right.
Or one player's stuff or some other media, because obviously if you mentioned Formula One, we have a Danish driver, Kevin Magnussen, in Formula One,
mm-hmm.
So that has become very popular in Denmark. So all media are doing social media stuff during a Formula One race. So if we didn't do it just because we had it on TV, we'd lose a lot of engagement there, and we'd lose a lot of control over the discussion around the ride that we want we want to have some sort of control over that engagement. Right? Yeah.
And I love just take a big broad picture. If there are, like, when you look at the States, when you look at what media entities are doing out here, or even in the UK or elsewhere, or even teams, what are the biggest differences, you think, for Scandinavia, for Denmark, and how you guys go about it? Are there any things that you think you guys do better, or that you think that you guys could improve on?
There's a lot of things we do differently, and that is mainly because of the language barrier, because mm-hmm. we are 5.5 million people in Denmark, so and that's the only people in the world speaking Danish,
mm-hmm.
And that is like our target group. That's the people that we can earn some money from,
mm-hmm.
In terms of the sport that we show in Denmark. We do some other stuff with e-sport and boxing and so on, but so we are very focused on this small community, and it gives us some boundaries, if you can say it like that. We can't get the reach that people can in the States or in England, because you have such a global target group, audience,
right.
that understands your content. So we need to pick our fights. We need to, when we put out something that we want to go viral, it needs to be very good. And we need to have, like, it needs to we can't monetize viral stuff. We need the traffic. We need we have maybe the longest pre-roll strategy in the world. I haven't ever seen a website with 1 minute pre-rolls that you can't skip, but we have that, and we have that before every goal we show, every highlight we show on our website.
And completion, and that doesn't tend to affect completion rates. You guys see that most fans will sit through the pre-roll.
I'm not sure I can reveal the numbers.
Right, right. I don't expect numbers, but in general, it's a successful strategy.
In terms of that, we're still increasing the number of video starts. So that must be the answer to that. I'm not sure it's the right way to do it. It's not my strategy. It comes from some bosses higher up in the system.
Okay.
But I can tell you that we just had a record here in March, and we've never seen so many video starts on our website as we had in March. So. Mm-hmm. So we're still growing, and if we focus on the good side of it, it is that we've done it for years now.
Mm-hmm.
People know that's one of the things you need to deal with if you come to our page,
right?
And if you want to see watch the highlights, so people are accepting it.
Right, as long as they're accustomed to it, it's consistent. That definitely can go a long way.
Exactly, and I think a lot of other media in Denmark are actually looking at it and publicly they're probably saying, "Well, they're stupid, and oh, they're so annoying, and they're so commercial, and they show all these commercials." But I believe in their strategy meetings, they're probably a bit jealous because we've been pretty consistent around it, yeah. We do earn a lot of money on it, so it might be right, but I have no idea how many video starts and how broad a reach we would have if we had another pre-roll strategy. I don't know if we would have more interest around our sports rights, because we could get all the stuff out to a larger audience. We have a pretty dedicated fan base, but obviously it's hard to get all Danish people to accept a 1 minute pre-roll.
Right,
so,
right. Having a really good conversation here with Kasper Vestering. He's the social media manager for TV3 Sport. And I just want to stay on that monetization aspect, just a few minutes left here, really quickly. I know in the States, you know, we see a lot of quote-unquote branded content. It might be the plays of the week presented by Budweiser, or the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts, or the Coca-Cola highlight. Or is there some of that, presented by or sponsored content as well that's becoming a part of what you guys do?
Yeah, actually it is. It started out, we have it's called a creative sales department. They were mainly working with television and doing partnerships for like our Champions League build-up or Formula One or whatever. And it was always, the deal was always that they wanted a number of mentions in tickers or crawls on television, and it was built up around the competition. But as we've increased our fan bases and have these pretty huge Facebook pages with a lot of reach and a lot of impressions, it has become a regular target in all these deals with sponsors. That they need some number of posts and they need to build the competition around our mainly our Facebook pages.
Mm-hmm.
So I have weekly meetings with the creative sales department, and we always have one or two partnerships going on with the it could be we had a competition where you could win a car with Renault. We've had Heineken, we've had Gillette, and a lot of stuff.
And then one last thing for you. I'd love to hear about the athletes. Are there some Danish athletes that command a lot of social media presence? I know you mentioned the F1 driver. And are there athletes who are active on social media, whether it's Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter?
Actually, there aren't too many in Denmark. Mm-hmm. There are some, but they're pretty cautious, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We have one footballer called Niklas Bentner.
Mm-hmm.
He played in Arsenal and he didn't play a lot, actually. He came to Arsenal as a 16 years old and was there for a lot of years. And he's become very famous in England and in Europe in general with the name Lord Bentner. People always joking of him being the best striker in the world and stuff like that, because he's been very he's just been saying like that. I want to be the best in the world, and I should play in the best clubs and mm-hmm. all like that. And he has definitely not been one of the best players in the world. So now he's playing in Norway actually. but he's done a lot of stupid stuff outside of the pitch. and also on his on his Instagram and his especially on his Instagram post, done a lot of weird posts there and posting about a car that he wasn't allowed to drive for his club in Germany and him sitting almost naked in a chair and a lot of pretty awkward stuff there. So he's a lot of fun.
Are the younger athletes starting to adopt social media more, or is it just a part of the culture that they are a little bit cautious because they've kind of been scared off to some degree?
Yeah, I think they're very cautious. So we have some other examples, but all our biggest players, our biggest talents, and they're very cautious, and mm-hmm. they've in football they've been in the bigger clubs since they have been like 16 years, mm-hmm. And they have learned to be very cautious from their clubs. So that's one of the differences, Neil, is that the clubs in Europe, mm-hmm. You can't compare their view on social media with the clubs in the States. You had this thing with the NBA putting down some regulations on the club, mm-hmm. that they couldn't like tease each other.
Yeah.
That is a bit sad because that is something that gives a lot of buzz around the US post. I also remember this one post that I once mentioned around the, I don't remember the name for it, but when Donald Trump was put in as president, mm-hmm. one East hockey club had, NHL club had this post with their spectator number being 1.5 million, and it was so funny, but it was also like picking on Donald Trump. Maybe mm-hmm. he's a guy that you could do that for, but you would I cannot find an example of a European club doing something that is very that is including politics or teasing each other too much. You wouldn't see the bigger clubs doing that. They are very cautious around the way they do it, and I mm-hmm. think they teach their players to be pretty cautious too.
How about Team of Three Sport, Casper? Do you guys have a voice you try to cultivate? I mean, you see, you know, like an ESPN might say, you know, there's a great save. It might be like, don't mess with this keeper, for example, or and you're just almost inject some voice and personality into it. Or are you guys trying to just be fairly formal, like watch a good save from this keeper?
Oh yeah, no, we're trying to like. We're not afraid to provoke people a bit, but we could take one stand and then we could take another, but we're not afraid to like pick on players and because we know that people are so engaged and they can't see things objectively if they have a favorite club or a favorite player, so we try to do it, but we can do it with some players. And for example, this Cristiano Ronaldo versus Lionel Messi, we have to be very, very cautious because people really get angry, and they really get angry on each other. They don't get, they also get angry with us. But we try to do it in a way that sparks and discussion between the fans and not between us and the fans.
But there is some personality in the voice. It's not just like a robot talking.
Oh no,
very definitely good. Not. Oh, yeah, I love this. Yeah. I can ask so many more questions, Casper. But we're gonna get this episode's shareable stat. Then we're gonna have a little more fun with you in our Casper Chatter section. So we'll be right back with our shareable stat.
What a cool conversation with Casper Vestering, social media manager for TV3 Sport out in Denmark. Could really pick his brain all day. Learned so much about how they do things over there in Denmark and Scandinavia. A lot of cool things to take away from that interview, and I hope you enjoyed it. And we're going to have a little more fun coming up with Casper in our Casper Chatter segment. But first, this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat is from the recent Google study that you may have come across that looks at what Gen Z and millennials think is cool among brands, among platforms, and other things as well. And some stats that stood out to me, one in particular was a ranking of the top four platforms, social platforms primarily, that they found to be cool. And number one was YouTube, number two was Netflix, number three Spotify, number four Hulu. So really that YouTube one, which I'm sure Google didn't mind coming out of that study because they, of course, own YouTube, really stood out. And a place that perhaps sports teams are not leveraging to the best of their ability. You know, a lot of folks use YouTube as kind of a dumping ground for all things video. If you create a feature for in-game, for highlights, you just automatically stick it on YouTube and take advantage of the search optimization for it, because YouTube is a highly searched platform, which is nothing wrong with that. It can be a great place to discover video, but the reason that so many Gen Zers and millennials to a lesser degree are spending time on YouTube and thinking it's cool is not so much because they are going down rabbit holes of highlights. Sure, that happens every now and then, but really looking at how are they using the platform. They're watching others. They're engaging. They're looking at unboxing. I mean, there's so many a number of things that I don't even have. I'm not an expert on by any means, but it's certainly something to research more. Think about how can we use YouTube more effectively? How can we use it in the way that is making these Gen Z survey respondents think it's the coolest platform out there? Pay attention to what the popular YouTubers are doing. How can you adapt what they're doing with your team, with your players, with your brand, with your content? So take a look at it. It's a really cool study by Google, and one thing that stood out was, of course, the four coolest platforms according to Gen Z, and YouTube very much at the top. So think about it, learn from it, and take action on it. That's the episode of Shareable Stat. We'll be right back now with Casper Vestering of TV3 Sport for our Casper Chatter segment.
All right, that was this episode's Shareable Stat, and now we are right back with Casper Vestering. He is the social media manager for TV3 Sport in Denmark and does work all over Scandinavia. Really learned a ton from you, Casper, in the interview. We need to do a second edition, perhaps. So you did a great job with the interview. Are you now ready for a little Casper chatter?
I'm all set.
Let's do it. All right. Number one, I want to know the North American athlete who is the most popular in Denmark.
Oh yeah. So we're all about soccer, and so there'll be no one there.
so is it a European football player? Is it like a Messi or a Ronaldo that's the most popular athlete in the world in Denmark?
Yeah, definitely those two. Yeah, yeah.
Is there a sport in the States or in North America that fans do follow? Or is there much NBA?
NFL is actually quite big in Denmark.
Interesting.
The group of people following NFL are very dedicated. So we have, as I told earlier in the podcast, we have a lot of Facebook pages. I think we have around 20 Facebook pages now. And our second biggest Facebook page is the NFL page.
Wow.
And we have a lot of engagement on that page because it's not our biggest sport in terms of viewers, mm-hmm. also because of the hours that it's mainly played at night, during the night in Denmark. But we don't have many viewers watching the NFL games who are not engaging with us on Facebook, and our commentators are using the Facebook page a lot in their commentating.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom Brady is definitely a big name here, and we've done a lot of boxing too. So Floyd Mayweather, he's also kind of funny on social mm-hmm. media. He's
That's
big too.
Yep. So when NFL is happening, is someone awake at that time of night, or you guys just catch up the following morning?
No. Some of the matches are played at like 11 p.m.
Okay.
And then you have another one going on at, is it 1:30 in the night? So people are awake there and are watching the games there. But it is it's a fair audience. It's maybe like 4 or 5 times smaller than a regular Champions League match, which is around 9 p.m. So that's a very good time for us showing Champions League.
Yeah.
So it's not too big, but they're very engaged and they really like the NFL and it looks like we have a chance of getting our second Danish player in the NFL this year in the draft. So we'll also be showing all the draft rounds, and that'll be a lot of fun watching if anyone will pick this Danish guy.
Very nice. Number two for you, Casper. Tell me your number one tip for a social media and sports professional.
Yeah. I think working with sports and tech or social media, mm-hmm. You'll meet a lot of people who has their passion in sports. You'll meet a lot of young people who have their passion in sport, and they kind of got their foot into the sports world by knowing social media and like being young and having skills on a phone and on a tablet and so on. My tip would be keep your interest or increase your interest in tech and not only in sports, mm-hmm. and get some skills, some special skills within tech. But follow the development. Try new tools. Try to always add on some tech skills and not only exploit your sports interest and enjoy that you're working in sports, because it's the tech part that really is key.
Hey, your career path is a testament to that for sure. You came up exactly. In tech. Number three for you, tell me the best sports event you've ever attended and the one you most want to attend still.
So that is sort of the same, because the best sports event I've ever attended, I didn't really attend, because that was the Super Bowl in 2011 in Dallas. Mm-hmm. I was traveling around Central America and the States for 6 months there, doing some thinking about my career and doing some freelancing. I was a sports journalist at that point. So I was doing some video interviews outside the stadium in Dallas, or in Arlington, I believe it was, mm-hmm. Outside Dallas. And I didn't go to the match. But that was so exciting to be around the match, to experience the whole Super Bowl event, how people were flying in, and how there was a lot of stuff that was very, very new to me at that Super Bowl. So and I could just hear people roaring in the stadium, and I tried to drive around the time and get some feeling of the Super Bowl. But I really, really, really wanted to get inside that stadium, and I believe so. That's the event I really want to attend. It is a Super Bowl. I really want to to get in there and try to experience
it. You and me both. You and me both.
I've been to some Champions League matches in Rome, watching AS Roma against Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. Very exciting in Paris, and I've been to a lot of football games, soccer games in London, and that has been great. But a Super Bowl, that would be like the ultimate thing. Also because I've been so close to experience.
Yeah. Hey, well, you mean we both need to go together, man.
Yeah, definitely.
Number four for you, Casper. Tell me the reporter or sports media personality in Europe that does the best job on social media.
So that'll be the answer that everyone in England or Europe would probably give. That is Gary Lineker, mm-hmm. From England, a former striker. He just kind of nailed it early on, so he got a huge following, and I believe he has a good team to keep a high activity level on, mm-hmm. his Twitter profile. But Gary Lineker is good. There's a lot of opinions about him, but he is good, and he's very good at if you have something that is the talk of the town, he's always there with a one-liner that is just like putting it to the taking it to the next level, or just summing up what it's all about. We put some tweets on screen in our Champions League shows, and it's very rare if we don't have a tweet from Gary Lineker during our after match shows on television.
Very nice. That's cool. You guys take the tweets into account too. Tell me number five for you. I'm interested to hear this one. The sports event that had or has the most buzz on social media for a TV3 sports audience.
Yeah, it is the Champions League final. Mm-hmm. That is, but that is also because we have so many sports going on during the season So we have like we have football matches going on every night. But when the Champions League is coming to an end, it's all the seasons are closed down. So we have like a week to build up for the Champions League match. And a few or 5 years ago, I guess they changed it to be on a Saturday night. So it's such a good time in the end of all seasons, like the final of all the football seasons. So we have a lot of engagement during the whole Champions League final week. And, you know, we have all our TV departments working for us. So we produce a lot of content there. Mm-hmm. So that is the peak. But I want to say the Super Bowl, too. Because even though the Super Bowl is a horrible time for Danish people, it's at I think it starts at 5 a.m.
Oh wow!
No, that's not right. It stops around 5 a.m. Monday morning. So you have to sit up all Sunday. We build up from 10 p.m. I believe the match starts around 1 a.m. and then you need to sit there for the whole time. And especially for this last Super Bowl that. Yeah, you needed to stay awake for the whole match.
Oh,
but as I told you before, we have a very engaged NFL crowd, and our journalists and hosts and commentators working with the NFL are so good at including our Facebook page in their build up and in their studio and commentating. So it's a huge night too, this year we did a second. A stream of the match, which was NFL for Dummies stream, where we had one of our very famous football hosts sitting there with one of the NFL experts, and you could just ask questions. And we have, I believe, we had around 1,000 questions for them during the night there.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we created a lot of new interest in NFL by doing that. So that was a lot of engagement too.
Very cool. Tell me now, number six for you, Casper, the most unique sport or tradition in Danish sports or in Danish sports fans?
Yeah, that's a bit hard because I think we could point out some sports where so Danish people, we are a small country. Danish people love when Danes are winning something.
Mm-hmm.
If we can beat the world in something, they love it. And that has been like, So at one point we won silver medals at a Olympics in curling, and everyone was talking about curling. We have had a lot of traditionally and historically we have a lot of great badminton players. So badminton mm-hmm. is very big in Denmark, at least when we're winning. But then the overall number one and the sport that attracts the most viewers of everything in sports in Denmark is handball. Personally, I kind of hate it because it's they only want to watch it when it's Denmark playing and they, you know, they use the first names on all the players. It's my dad who don't know shit about sports. he's all up around this. Oh, and it's tonight. They're gonna play again tonight, and they have like half the country watching the matches. But I think that would be like the weird thing. Special thing about Denmark that they are so psyched up about handball because we can win a lot there.
That's interesting for sure. All right, number seven for you. We always got to ask about food on the podcast. So tell me the best food to get at a sports event in Denmark and the best food to get if I visit you out there in Denmark.
Yeah, so the best food in Denmark is what I suggest to everyone visiting Denmark is what we call smørbrød. And it's like a sandwich on this we call rugbrød, which is rye bread of some sort. But it's a very special Danish thing to eat, and you can have a lot of different stuff on top of this bread. And that's definitely something you need to eat if you ever come to Denmark. And in terms of stadium, we have it's called the Super League, the best football or soccer league in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
We have a small team, but they're actually doing pretty well at the moment, called Lyngby, just north of Copenhagen, and they have a very, very, very special sausage. So it's pretty classic with a sausage in Denmark when you're going to a football match, but there, the Lyngby pølse, it's called Lyngby sausage, is very famous and is especially the especially made from a local butcher, and has been there for years. And yeah, it's very, very famous.
Nice.
So that's the thing to go for.
It sounds delicious. It's almost lunchtime here, so I'm hungry right now. All right, number eight for you. Tell me, what sport is growing the fastest in Denmark and even overall in Europe from your perspective?
I'm maybe a bit biased also of the things that we work with. So mm-hmm. we got the rights for the UFC. Mm-hmm. 1.5 years ago, and I think the interest around UFC and especially Conor McGregor and, mm-hmm. and all the buzz he's creating is really growing. I don't know if that's just my view on it, that we've had a lot of big Danish boxers mm-hmm. During the years, and boxing has also been very big in Denmark. But we have like a period where we don't have a lot of very popular boxers, and then at the same point UFC is there and they're really doing a good job in terms of putting out quality content, really having some structure around their events, and people are really buying into it, and we've had four or five Danish fighters in the UFC, and there's a lot of growing interest there. But I need to mention esport too, because we are also doing a lot of esport in my company. And esport is really growing. In CS:GO, we have three Danish teams competing as some of the best teams in the world. One Danish team, Astralis, just won a major in Atlanta, and there's a lot of buzz around esport in Denmark. But I believe mm-hmm. that's the same globally.
Oh, very much so. Both hit home there too with UFC and with esports. They're big out here in the States and growing quickly. All right, last one for you, Casper. Tell me your favorite athlete growing up when you were a kid and the active athlete you'd most want to meet right now.
Yeah, and I'll stick to soccer because that's mm-hmm. that's always been my favorite sports. And we had, and you probably don't know him, but Michael Laudrup, mm-hmm. a Danish footballer playing for both Barcelona, Real Madrid, Juventus. And a lot of games for the national team, and I've had the pleasure to work with him at TV3 Sport.
Wow.
He's been an expert for us. He's been a manager too. Now he's managing in a club in Qatar, but he's mm-hmm. been in Swansea and he's been in some Spanish clubs too, Mallorca, and so he's just like a legend in Denmark mm-hmm. and in Europe actually, and.
That's awesome.
So definitely my favorite growing up, and
And how about the one right now?
A lot of my passwords, if you think of his name, some combinations with that name. But and the person I'd want to meet the most now is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, because he's just from being this a bit annoying teenager when he was young, he's just cool. Because do you remember I mentioned Niklas Bentner, the Danish guy earlier? He's bragging so much, saying so much, being so cocky, but not delivering anything on field. And Zlatan is just, he knows he's the king, and then he's showing it on the pitch and has won so many championships, and he's just keeping on scoring goals, and he's just cool. So, and he's from
definitely
Sweden, our neighbors, so we kind of, he's almost half Danish, right? So.
Oh, he's definitely a good one there. I think a lot of people would have him on the list. All right, Casper did a great job in your Casper Chatter segment. Now, your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. If they're someone on Twitter, if they're a blogger or a Facebook page, who they are and why they're worth following.
Yeah, I want to mention Paul Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
Paul Rogers 73. And he's I don't remember his actual position, but I believe he's head of digital for Roma,
mm-hmm.
AS Roma, Italian football club. And Italian football is not that hyped, or they don't get a lot of interest in Denmark or around the world, I think. But he is doing a tremendous job, and obviously his bosses are doing a tremendous job giving him all the resources he gets and the room to experiment, but so yeah, I really get a lot of inspiration by following AS Roma on social and just watching their website.
Yeah.
And Paul really has his he really knows what's going on in the world of sports and tech. So that's a good guy to follow.
Yeah, definitely. What Roma has done with their website and really making it fan focused and having fans help design it has been really good, and all the user generated content. And how about yourself, Casper? Where can we find you as well as all things TV3 Sport on social media?
Yeah, so TV3 Sport would be TV3 Sport DK, and then obviously on Facebook we have a lot of pages,
right?
So that'll be hard work, and there won't be a lot of value in following that unless you're from Denmark, and then you hopefully follow us already if you're listening to this podcast. So and I am. I am on Twitter. I'm called @Vestering, Vestering.
Perfect.
And I'm on LinkedIn also, Casper Vestering, Casper with a C. But yeah,
perfect.
Search for it, and hopefully there's no one in the world with the same name, so hopefully you'll find me.
And can definitely check out TV3 Sports website, and as long as you're willing to sit through some pre-rolls. But Casper, really, thank you again for coming on the podcast today. Just so great to learn from you and learn about what's happening in social media and sport all across the world, and some really interesting insights. And thanks so much again for the time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure, really.
And best of luck over these busy couple weeks. So we got with Champions League in full gear. I know it's never a downtime for you guys there.
It isn't, and it is actually a crazy April here with a lot of. Very good football matches going on. So, yeah.
Should be fun. Times.
Well, thanks so much again to Casper Vestering, social media manager for TV3 Sport in Denmark. A really accomplished guy, really smart guy, and just learned so much from him. And that I could tell you that we could have talked for another hour or two just kind of picking his brain about all these things that differ and are similar in the way that social media and sports kind of go together out in Denmark and out here in the United States. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening. You can find other episodes at iTunes, Stitcher, and as well as other content and episodes at dsmsports.net. And I'd love to for you to hit me up on Twitter at njh287. Until next time, we'll see you on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.